The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High five!
High five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey parents, looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mission Control, just outside of Moscow. Picture a vast hall with rows of desks and those massive 80s computers. It's February 1985. And a few ground controllers are trawling through graphs and signals sent from a space station called Salyut 7, the pride and joy of the Soviet space program. Right now, Salyut 7 hasn't got any cosmonauts on board. It's on autopilot, orbiting the Earth, waiting for its next crew. So the ground controllers' work is fairly routine. They record data, talk about their weekend plans. But then, right at the end of the shift, someone notices something weird on one of the dashboards. There's a light flashing on the control panel, a warning light. Everyone's on their feet trying to fix it. But then another light goes down. And another. One by one, the whole dashboard goes dark. A horrified silence fills the room. They've just lost the space station.
It's like a dead piece of thing in orbit.
That's Asif Siddiqui, our Soviet space guy you heard last time.
They couldn't find any kind of signal, nothing from the station. It's essentially floating, spinning, probably out of control in Earth orbit. And it's huge. This huge chunk of metal, if they don't control it, it might fall uncontrollably on an inhabited country and it could land on a city, a village, somewhere. And so they're very afraid of that.
Thousands of people could die. It would be a human tragedy and a huge embarrassment for the Soviet Union. And so they need to do something that's never been done before. To land on a dead object in space, an out-of-control chunk of metal, and bring it back to life. I'm Lance Bass, and from Kaleidoscope, iHeart Podcast, and Exile Content, this is The Last Soviet. As y'all know, I am obsessed with space. And with this one particular space movie.
Houston, we have a problem.
Apollo 13. I freaking love this film. In my books, Tom Hanks can do no wrong.
Power up the limb.
3 hours by the checklist.
We don't have that much time.
It tells the story of a space flight gone seriously awry. The rescue mission became live news. All of America was watching, asking themselves, would the astronauts make it home alive?
Of the Apollo 13,
to the moon is in serious jeopardy.
Disasters are one of the big reasons we fall in love with space.
We're now coming to the moment, the last moments of Apollo 13 as it begins its re-entry. The best thing we can do now is just to listen and hope.
The stakes could not be higher. And it's all beamed into your living room 24/7.
They've made it. All three shoots out. Listen to the crowd on the boat.
It really looks great.
An extremely loud applause here in Mission Control.
Hello, Houston. This is Odyssey. It's good to see you again.
But the story I'm about to tell you now took place in complete secrecy. No one was allowed to know about it. And yet, it's the Soviet Union's very own Apollo 13. And the man who would lead it from the ground? Yep, you guessed it. Sergei Krekalev. In our last episode, we left our cosmonaut in 1961, aged 3. The Soviet Union was still recovering from the wreckage of World War II. But they'd beat the Germans. And now, against all the odds, they'd conquered space, too.
Space was going to be the future of the Soviet Union. And that generation who grew up in the 1960s were really sort of, I think, encouraged to think in utopian terms.
Utopian.
The Soviet Union putting the first person in space was the defining moment of Sergei's childhood. And there was a sense that this was just the beginning of space exploration, of the Soviet Union's rise on the global stage.
All Russia's just wild about Yuri Gagarin, first man to conquer space.
Space.
For Sergei, life's possibilities must have seemed endless.
So I think it's very much part of his DNA, and that generation in particular, growing up in the 60s and 70s as children and then as young teens, to be immersed in that world of future-oriented thinking about the Soviet Union.
Future-oriented. Things are good, and you only expect them to get better. Now, if you grew up in the United States during the tail end of the Cold War like me, I know what you're thinking. You'd have been fed the same propaganda that the Soviet Union was a cold, gray place where kids go hungry. Well, in the 60s, that was more likely to be true of America.
73% of all Clay County families receive less than $3,000. The very young, their mothers, the aged, are the most numerous inhabitants of this permanent culture of poverty.
Yep. Because in the Soviet Union, basic stuff, food, a roof over your head, that was all provided for by the state.
Whether in communist headquarters in Odessa on the Black Sea, or in the Hermitage Art Gallery in Leningrad, every activity is controlled by directives that originate under the gold domes of the Kremlin.
So if you're Sergei, a young boy coming of age in Leningrad in the 60s and 70s, things would have seemed pretty good. He didn't grow up in luxury, but it was a carefree environment. He knew everything was going to be just fine. He went to school, he went swimming, he joined the city's gymnastics team and the local airplane club, all for free. And in his spare time, he was doing what all the other kids were doing in the Soviet Union.
He would have been reading the same kinds of exciting, popular science fiction and novels.
Titles like Hard to Be a God, The Land of Crimson Clouds, The Man from Mars. It was all about space. Limitless possibility. Utopia. And not just in the pages of his books.
He would have grown up watching these hero cosmonauts being eulogized.
A huge crowd of Muscovites, fellow cosmonauts, and Russian leaders.
And doing amazing things in outer space.
After Gagarin, the USSR just kept beating the Americans to it. First probe to Mars.
Landing on Mars by an unmanned space probe from Earth.
First woman in space.
The first ever space girl, Valentina Tereshkova, has won a place in history.
First person to walk in open space.
Man, for the first time, has stepped forth into the emptiness of space.
Okay, the Americans got to the moon in 1969. Obviously, a big deal. But the Soviets were working on something bigger. A permanent home in space. A space station where cosmonauts can go, live, and actually do some science. The Soviets wanted to spend months up there,
maybe eventually, forever. It looked like a weird Lego tube with solar panel wings. They call it Salyut 1, and over the next decade, they upgraded it with better and better versions. Salyut 2, Salyut 3, kind of like iPhones. Till they got the best version yet. Salyut 7. The Americans were jealous. They had nothing like it. Once again, the Soviets were winning. And it's in this atmosphere that Sergei finished school and decided he too wants to become a cosmonaut, to go and live on a Soviet space station. And so he went to an engineering university, and in 1981, he graduated top of his class. And because of that, he was chosen to work for a very special place. The same place that designed the first space satellite, the first spaceship carrying the first man. A place called Energia. Sergei starts out working on instruction manuals for cosmonauts. Not the most exciting work, but it will come in handy. Because one day in February 1985, Sergei gets a call.
The space station, Salyut 7. It's lost power. It's dead. If we don't rescue it, the Americans will overtake us and win the space race. So here's the plan. It's kind of crazy. We're gonna send two cosmonauts to this dead thing and try to turn the power back on. But we don't really know how to do it because it's never been done before. So we need someone who can figure out how to do it. Someone to lead the mission from the ground. Someone who knows the station back to front. And we're thinking, this could be you.
High Five Casino.
High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas, and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at high5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
June 6th, 1985, 10:40 a.m., Mission Control. A loud, ominous rumbling starts up on Sergei's radio. It's the sound of a rocket taking off. Two cosmonauts are launching into space, to the dead, empty station. Sergei's got a big job ahead of him. In about 48 hours, the time it'll take to reach Earth's orbit, he's going to have to tell these two cosmonauts how they're going to do this thing no one's ever done before, how to land on a dead station. Usually, landing on a working station is the easy bit. It's all done automatically. But this station is dead. And that means Sergei has to figure out how to do it manually. How to land on the station with nothing to tell you the way, the speed, the angle. It's a bit like driving a race car at night with no lights, No markers. But Sergei is on it. He goes into a simulator, a kind of fake spaceship. It's the same thing I trained on. It literally looks and feels like a real spaceship, but it's set up in a warehouse on Earth. The next best thing to being in space. So he starts practicing. How to get the tiny ship to spin at the same angle as the station. How to get the right speed. And his accuracy has to be exact. If he's off by an inch, millimeters even, the rocket will crash into the station and explode. The cosmonauts are dead. He tries again and again and again, failing and failing, until he's got it. He races back to mission control, calls up to the cosmonauts, and tells them this is how you do it. It's now or never. Hundreds of miles away, the cosmonauts can see the looming bulk of the station through their porthole. It's spinning out of control. A 20-ton chunk of metal. And they're approaching it fast at 18,000 miles an hour. Sergei feels his breathing accelerate. At any moment, ground control could lose contact. You can imagine him shutting his eyes, hoping, praying, and then a juddering sound, like something's wrong with the radio. Static. 5 seconds. 4 seconds. 3 seconds. 2 seconds. And then he hears it. The cosmonauts' voices on the radio. They'd made it. But Sergei knows. It's just the beginning. The cosmonauts still have to enter the ship, find the root of the problem, and bring the station back to life. And they've got no idea what they're going to find inside.
They didn't know, for example, if the entire station was filled with toxic gases. They didn't know if the station was frozen. They didn't know if the station was cracked. They had no idea. If you open the hatch and there's a big chunk of ice, you know, what would you do? If you open the hatch and the LED screens are broken, cracked, and there's glass, what do you do? They opened the hatch and very gingerly walked into the what's called a transfer compartment. And they slowly, gingerly again opened another hatch into the main compartment. And one of the things that I think both cosmonauts remember is that everything was just dead silence. They'd never been in space before in a completely silent environment. Because when you're in a spaceship, things are whirring and clicking and moving and things like that. It's dead silence, a silence that I don't think any human being had ever really heard. It's outer space. And they're moving in this dead, dark, pitch-black space station in utter silence.
It's also freezing. Everything, the walls, the panels, are covered in a sheet of ice.
They move by touch. They have flashlights, of course, and they eventually figure out the lay of the land.
Through the weak beams of their torches, they can just about make out the station's long, cavernous corridors filled with lifeless equipment and reams of wires. Sergei instructs them to work very carefully.
All the batteries they check, they have these instruments, you know, 0 volt, 0 volt, 0 volt, etc. All the batteries are dead.
And remember, it's really cold, so they can't spend too long on the station.
And every time, you know, they go in there, they come back, and they're completely freezing.
On the ground, in the Soviet press, this mission was really downplayed. They didn't even say it was a rescue mission at all. just routine. Going up there, doing some science experiments.
In fact, they had a press conference.
A video press conference.
From space during their mission, these two cosmonauts. And they were told to take off their warm clothes, like their hats and gloves and whatever, because people would be wondering why they're wearing this in space. So for the duration of the conference, you know, however long, 20 minutes or so, they were extremely cold, but pretending everything's fine. The idea was that nothing ever goes wrong in the Soviet space program.
That's right. Nothing ever goes wrong in the Soviet space program, or in the Soviet economy, or in Soviet society. The system was flawless. That was the party line. And the cosmonauts, freezing their asses off, had to stick it out. The cosmonauts spend days working in pitch-black, sub-zero temperatures, trying to find a working power source. These kind of situations where everything has gone sideways is what they train you for as a cosmonaut. When I was training, we ran drills where things went perfectly. But I would say 80% of the time, we were practicing for when things went wrong. But it still doesn't prepare you fully. So for a long time, there's nothing. But then, finally, Sergei sees a small number of lights begin to flicker. The crew have managed to reactivate one of the solar panels. This means the station finally has some power. It's gonna be okay. They can save the station. Mission Control erupts in ecstatic applause. Sergei finds himself being wrapped into hugs, kissed on the cheeks, mobbed.
This is a unique, unique event in the history of space exploration where a crew essentially brought their spaceship to a dead object in space and revived the whole thing within weeks.
Sergei had done the near impossible. He saved the station. He wasn't going to be a national hero like Gagarin, parading through Red Square. The whole thing was top secret. But he was going to get a reward.
I don't think it's a coincidence that very soon after the mission, he gets assigned to a crew.
A crew to actually go to space, see the Earth from above, float around in zero gravity. His dream, the one he's had since he was a little boy, was finally about to come true.
I think for Krikalev, I think it might have seemed when he's assigned to his first mission, my guess is, you know, the future is bright and who knows what's ahead. It's the boundless future. But I think we have a better sense of it now that some of this stuff was just kind of the last gasp. The last gasp of a collapsing superpower.
The Soviet Union then was frozen. The economy was grinding to a halt. It was a time of total stagnation. Nothing was changing, and if it didn't change soon, it would come crashing down.
That's Serge Schmimann. He's a reporter for the New York Times. In 1980, he was working as a journalist in South Africa when he was told by his editor, "We want you to go and cover Moscow."
From the peak of summer to the depth of winter,
Serge and his family stopped over in Helsinki and bought warm clothes. Then took a slow train to Moscow on New Year's Eve.
We had one can of beer to celebrate. And if the train was empty, nobody was traveling on New Year's night on December 31st.
Early in the morning on January 1st, they pulled into Moscow Central Station.
It was dead. Everybody was asleep. After a night of revelry,
dawn was just breaking, and the station clock tower was bathed in this beautiful golden light, and the square was covered in a fresh layer of untouched snow.
It was like a storybook Moscow.
A storybook Moscow. But soon enough, reality hit.
Shops were largely empty. You know, there was very little. There was. You could survive. There was bread. There was meat. But it was all on an elemental level.
The bare minimum. Because by the 80s, the Soviet economy had stopped working. For decades, all decisions about what to spend and how much to produce were made in a single office building in Moscow for millions of people. And while these bureaucrats in this office building put a ton of money towards flashy space projects, they didn't pay much attention to how people were going to feed themselves. And eventually, by the 80s, this caught up with him. The system had become inefficient and corrupt. The Soviet Union couldn't produce enough grain to feed its own population. There were chronic shortages all around.
Look, look how expensive these carrots are, and there's nothing else in the state stores.
But when things did occasionally appear, people went nuts.
This could be toilet paper, this could be, you know, toothpaste, it could be anything.
News spread fast. Your neighbor would tell you, hey, there's a cheese delivery at the store two streets over. You'd stop whatever you're doing and go.
People would rush to that store and line up.
People spend up to 3 hours a day waiting in line. The longest lines are at the vodka shops.
So there was, you know, like an army of people who walked around Moscow all day trying to find things to buy and getting in line. And I would join those lines.
The Soviet system was at breaking point, but people felt like they couldn't do anything about it.
You had absolutely no say in politics, in who ran your country and who ran your life, and to think about it, to talk about it, was dangerous.
Serge's storybook Moscow turned into a nightmare. And this was very bad news for Sergei as well. Because if there was no money in the Soviet Union, then there was no money for the space program. And that meant his dream of going to space might be over before it had even begun. It seemed that the country was stuck, that nothing would change. But then, it did.
This time, the Soviets seemed to have opted for a long-term change. The man who took charge within hours of Konstantin Chernenko's death,
the new Soviet leader, Mikhail Gorbachev.
Gorbachevы Михаила Сергеевича.
Get used to the name, Mikhail Gorbachev.
Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at highthenumber5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
Acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table because geek culture is pop culture. And we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, parents. Looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on. Get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
They'll explore and listen to the sounds of amazing places, like farms, racetracks, the moon, and even
construction sites.
That's right, Blippi.
Follow your ears. What do you hear?
And they'll meet new friends along the way. Alongside Blippi and Mika, your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the mid-80s, the gray-suited bureaucrats who had been running the country for decades began to, well, die off, one by one in quick succession. Andropov, Chernenko, people you'd probably never heard of. Footnotes in history.
Another Soviet leader who was too old and too sick when he took power to hold on to it has died.
And then they chose a great and sort of fateful act. They chose a young man, well-educated, well-spoken, charming smile, Mikhail Gorbachev.
Get used to the name, Mikhail Gorbachev.
He presented himself differently to the very formal, stuffy leaders that came before.
But above all, he's got charisma. I mean, he's got charisma Western style.
Much more aware of Soviet weaknesses, much more open to new ideas. By Soviet standards, he was revolutionary. It was an almost immediate, and I must say, enormously exciting change.
The change Gorbachev would bring to the Soviet Union was seismic.
This is the story of the emergence of Mikhail Sergeyevich Gorbachev, of the most sweeping changes in the Soviet Union since the Russian Revolution.
In February 1986, he delivered a speech that shook the country.
The notion was that we had to reform the way we live.
To reform the way we live in order to survive. To survive as the Soviet Union. And the reform had to be radical, from the bottom up. Gorbachev said that the people should be able to speak their minds, that people should be able to make money. He called it perestroika, a restructuring, and glasnost, openness.
Well, this is, to my mind, something like fresh air in our society, you see?
It's a great freedom.
I think that glasnost is the first step towards real democracy in our society.
It was an earthquake. It was a daily earthquake.
For the first time, you could start your own business.
And so suddenly bakeries appeared in Moscow and you could go get fresh bread. Things appeared that people could sell. Little shops appeared, kiosks in the street.
Culture opened up.
Suddenly every TV station is being more candid, is showing more.
The girl singing in Moscow and the boy singing in Minneapolis reached out, slipped just a little, and seemed to hold hands while half a world apart.
When you're coming out of that system where everything was controlled to an incredible degree, and especially when it's out of that period of stagnation, when there was nothing fun on TV, nothing interesting, sort of variety shows where 60-year-old veterans singing some old ballad, some old patriotic ballad. And suddenly, these things are happening.
American movies made it to Moscow.
I'm on the pass now.
For you!
Rambo.
For me, civilian life is nothing.
Star Wars.
You should not have come back.
James Bond.
I've looked forward to this moment, Mr. Bond.
There was so much demand.
I intend to enjoy it to the full.
Some savvy entrepreneurs pirated copies and set up makeshift movie theaters in their apartments.
You could speak, you could buy, you could think. I mean, all these things that had been under a cloud
were now out in the open.
There was a sense that, you know, the system was changing.
And that change encompassed everything from how you did your shopping to the space program. The space program that in 1985 did still have its space station, its crown jewel, but had no more money. The country was in such bad shape, the government could no longer afford to splurge on space. This was not just a practical matter. It was a question of national identity.
The cosmonauts became real heroes. Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space. So there was great pride in this program. It showed that Russia, the Soviet Union, that the Soviet people were ahead of the West in something that is so kind of advanced and dramatic and romantic.
But now there was no more money to fund this dramatic and romantic cornerstone of Soviet identity. No breaking the next frontier, no inspiring the Soviet people, no future. And no future for the program meant no future for our man, Sergei. But Gorbachev had an idea. An idea of how to save the mighty but crumbling space program.
to sell Soviet space services globally on the commercial market.
Yep, Gorbachev's big idea was capitalism. After decades of keeping everything under wraps, the Soviets were now going to say to the world, our space program is open for business. We'll launch your satellites for you.
So you could pay X million dollars, deliver your satellite to the Soviets, and they would launch it into space.
We can also sell you some of our world-class equipment, things no other space programs have. And this should have been an extremely attractive sales pitch for countries that don't have their own space programs. But there's one big problem.
Of course, they don't understand a thing about capitalism or markets or anything.
The Soviets were great at making high-tech stuff. But after years of living under communism, they were not so good at selling things, marketing, advertising. But then they finally come up with a plan that would totally change the space program and give our man Sergei a chance to fulfill his dream. Decades before Elon Musk, the Soviets started thinking, what if we sell seats to go to space? Invite people into the heart of the Soviet program. Train them. Fly them up there. In other words, space tourism. It was the idea that would eventually lead me, Lance Bass, to go to Russia and train to be a cosmonaut. The first country wanting to buy the Soviet services? Japan. They sent a TV journalist to the Soviet Union to fly with the cosmonauts. They were so desperate for money, the Soviets agreed that the rocket could be sponsored by Japanese brands, a pharmaceutical company, a manufacturer of sanitary towels, and a maker of karaoke equipment. The deal was worth $12 million. Pretty good. But it wasn't enough. So the Soviets decided to go bigger. They were going to create a contest to try to find the best person in an entire country to go to space.
I was driving my car home from work and flicking through the stations trying to find some music, and I heard an announcement, I suppose an advert really, and it started off with,
astronaut wanted, no experience necessary.
In the next episode, this unassuming British woman travels to Russia, like me, trains to be a cosmonaut, and flies with Sergei on the mission he almost didn't come home from. That's next time on The Last Soviet. The Last Soviet is a Kaleidoscope production in partnership with iHeart Podcast and Exile Media. Produced by Samizdat Audio. And hosted by me, Lance Bass. Executive produced by Kate Osborne and Mangesh Hadakador, with Oz Woloshin and Kostas Linos. From iHeart, executive produced by Katrina Norvell and Nikki Ettore. From Samizdat Audio, our executive producers are Joe Sykes and Dasha Lisitsina. Produced by Asya Fuchs, Dasha Litsitsina, and Joe Sykes. Writing by Lydia Marchant, research by Mika Golubovsky and Molly Schwartz. Music by Will Epstein, theme by Martin Orstrick. Sound design by Richard Ward. And special thanks to Nando Villa, Alyssa Pollock, Will Pearson, Connell Byrne, Bob Pittman, and Isaac Lee. If you want to hear more shows like this, nothing is more important to the creators here at Kaleidoscope than subscribers, ratings, and reviews. So please spread the love wherever you listen.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five.
High Five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Hello.
Well, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, parents. Looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.